Welcome to the Permatemp Corporation. A presentation of the audio podcast, This Is Actually Happening. Episode 58. What if you were pronounced dead at age 12?
Well, I grew up in Moscow, Russia, so that's where I was living. I was very academic-minded. My both parents were professionals. I read a lot of books all my life. But Russian children, especially in my generations, they all did. We all would read by the age of 3, and, you know, it was just normal. It's a kind of culture which puts pressure on you to succeed in this kind of way. Since there was no other kind of way to succeed. Going back to the argument that equality and freedom are opposites, so if you are forced to be equal, you're not free, and if you're free, then nobody will be equal. That's the way we could be unequal. We could not be in terms of property or income or anything else, but in terms of academic achievement, you could. And so that would help you advance. It would never bring you a bigger paycheck because janitor would be paid same as an engineer, but you would be more respectable and respected, and you would have friends of more interest and caliber, I guess. We traveled every summer, could not travel outside of Soviet Union, like ever, because my parents had better jobs, which means that they were classified. My dad was doing research, and my mom was working on building military airplanes. But we traveled someplace every summer within, and within was big enough. You could go to the Baltic countries, you could go to the Asian countries, you can go, like, in this summer we went to the Carpathian Mountains. That was our summer trip, so a month of summer trip was a norm for me. I was 12 and a half years old when the episode happened. At the time, we were on vacation, so we were not in Russia. We were in the western part of Ukraine, which is at the border where multiple countries come together, Romania, Czechoslovakia at the time. And we were on a tourist trip, organized group with the guides, and going through, I think, 5 or 6 different locations over a month, exploring the Carpathian Mountains and culture, traditions, whatever. And I was there with my mother. It was the third location in the whole trip. We just arrived there, and it was the first morning there, and some people rented some bicycles. Especially that summer, I spent a lot of time riding my bicycle before this trip back home in Moscow. So I was very enthusiastic that you could rent a bicycle, but because our friends already rented, and we haven't this morning, I asked my friend to borrow the bike. So I did. Nothing strange so far, except I've never ridden the sports bicycle. Mine were consumer-level bicycles with a back pedal being used as a brake. We were on the top of a mountain at the time it happened, in front of the hotel. And there was a nice paved road on the mountain. Down there was this fast mountain river. Anyway, so I get on a bike, and I enthusiastically start riding the bicycles. And then I realized there is no brake that I know. I used to use the foot brake. The road was paved with sharp, big rocks, so falling there was not an option, but somehow I eventually did. I was unconscious. I don't remember much other than I woke up in a hospital. What happened in the meantime was that I fell, breaking my speed with the surface of my body. So my clothes were on the right side of my body were gone entirely. There was nothing left. It was entire friction destroyed. My face was pretty much, the skin surface was gone. And for some reason, I had a hole in my head on the left side. they could not reach from the hospital to me for a while because the road is narrow and in the mountains. Walking would be 5 minutes. Driving around in serpentine roads took about an hour. They took me to the hospital. I was unconscious. My mom wished all this happened. That was the worst part. She ran after me. She was right there. We were ready for a tour in the morning when all this happened. So she wished basically her daughter die in the stupidest possible way. They brought me to the hospital. And this was a very small town. Everybody knew each other. So the doctors were conflicted big time because it was still the time of Soviet Union. Reporting and bureaucracy was dramatic. And of course, the doctors in the hospital knew whoever was administrators of the hotel where we stayed, and they didn't want bad statistics, whatever happened. So there was a lot of convoluted thing, but somehow they did think that I was dead and they pronounced me. Of course, it's all done through hearsay, as in I wasn't conscious. So I was told that they examined me and they didn't find vital signs. I was dead. I was told that it lasted about 15 minutes that I was dead. I realized, and I don't know what happened to me. I just came back, okay? I was riding down the bike, and I just came back. Then I wake up in the hospital. So once I realized that I'm back, they start trying to suture my head. My head has a big hole, and so first thing they do, they cut off my hair. Thick, nice, long braid, like proper Russian girl. Oh no, don't cut my hair. I literally remember saying this in this kind of way. So this was one of the first things which I did coming back from dead. Then I was in recovery, and the story in the hospital was actually very interesting because it being a small town, everyone heard about it, of course. And here I have a line of visitors. Somebody bringing me some fruit. It's a very agricultural area. Somebody bringing me a glass of super thick sour cream, you know, where you can put a spoon and it doesn't fall, right? My mom was silent, paralyzed, standing and staring at me. And she was always there, but she was very glad to feed me when I could eat in any format because that let her apply herself to something. You know, she could do something for me. But up until then, she was just a physical presence. If they tell you your only kid is dead, and then your kid comes back, you're already in such profound shock, and then your kid comes back, you also do not take it as a permanent feature probably either. You're still holding your breath. She said she was never the same again since that day. She could never organize her thoughts just as... She was a very talented engineer. She continued working all her life. But she thought that her brain was never working the same after the shock of what she witnessed. There were a lot of other things that were happening. They were trying to pretend that I never belonged to that tourist group and all that kind of things. Well, yeah, I mean, papers are manipulated so easily. So I'm not sure if for whatever reason it was more convenient for them to process it the wrong way. Maybe they were just under a lot of stress because it would be the first casualty of that kind of stupid kind in their town. So I don't know if pronouncing me dead was an honest mistake or a politically, bureaucratically guided something. They didn't want the travel bureau to have the record of poor oversight over tourists, especially 12-year-old tourists. They didn't have the bicycle issuing hotel to have trouble on the record. They just pretended that we were just random people that stayed in the hotel, but it was our own bicycle and all this kind of, you know, every little corner that you can cut to not screw your statistics, they did. Everything was like that. Everything was corrupt. Everybody was covering for everybody else. It was perhaps more pronounced, it being a small town and literally everyone covering for literally everyone else. And I was the outsider. And why did they need me? They were just eager to not have me through whatever means. So in terms of the accident content, well, I stayed there for a while. I did not, of course, follow on any tour trip. I was just in bed, you know, forever with all the help. Then they returned us home to Moscow. And then things started happening because I had a really bad concussion. No broken bones except for that one in the head, yeah. But real bad concussion. I was losing my sight once in a while. Just suddenly going blind. And then eventually it comes back. It's just turning it off and back on. First time was scary. About like 15, 20 minutes. Couldn't see anything suddenly. They, of course, studied all whatever happened to me and did all kinds of tests. But in terms of medical prognosis, I was in a very demanding academic school. And I was always a straight-A student and all that good stuff. And so they said, physically, no physical activity beyond like walking. Besides that, not carrying anything heavy, heavy as in school bag with textbooks, no. That was very convenient. My friend carried them for me. But they also told my mom that I should not be facing academic pressure and not doing any superior academics, to which I disagreed big time. Are they telling me my entire life? I was the top student at my school, so I stayed. And I had those headaches. Eyesight loss did go away completely at some point. So I was okay with eyes. But the headaches were killing me. 3 years later, I started acting my normal self. I still had headaches, but not as dramatic. And I started doing all normal things. In terms of implications, my husband especially points this out a lot. Based on observations, I have very high pain threshold. The natural mechanism of pain doesn't work my way because it's supposed to warn you and stop you from doing what's hurting your body. Well, I do not feel it for a long while. Eventually I do, but way eventually. I didn't like break my leg, but in terms of breaking fingers and toes, it happened and I didn't feel for a while. What probably is not so good is I don't get the warning from my body that something needs to be stopped because you're hurting yourself. So I don't get the signal. Yeah, I guess after I see it, visually see it, then I start thinking about it, of course, as anyone would, and I notice it more. Like if I fall and I have a big bruise or even a swelling or something, I would only discover that I have a bruise and swelling visually. I do not feel that pain till after. If I was hit by a car, I was not run over by a car, I was hit and sent flying. It was a situation where the cars have the right turn, it was entrance to the highway straight there, and it was pedestrian walk, so I waited properly. A car, and from their point of view, properly stopped, did not see me, just looked at the right, there were no other cars, and moved. So that's how a car hit me and I flew. I had bruises and scratches and swellings, but I pretty much the guy offered to take me to the hospital and I said, I'm sorry, I have an appointment I was going to. I have to keep going. I just went on my way and then everybody told me that I was crazy, that I was supposed to just sit there and call 911 no matter what. For all kinds of reasons, to be checked medically and, of course, for liability reasons. But it was just okay. It's very helpful when I go to the dentist. In Russia, they did 3 root canals for me without anesthesia. But in Russia, it was not a tradition at the time to use anesthesia for dental work. Because I felt less pain, I could allow them to do 3 root canals when you actually get something like a bottle opener, right, and screw it into the nerve and then yank. I probably, in anticipation, probably pinched my finger or something with my nail. Not a huge deal. for first children, usually the birth goes long and painful, and because you've never been there and you've read too many books to scare you anyway, so much unknown. And first time I did have the painkillers. My second daughter though was born, and she was over 10 pounds, which is huge for a girl. And I didn't have any painkiller for the second birth at all, so not even like Tylenol. So I immigrated to the United States in January of 92, which was right after the fall of the Soviet Union, when I could leave. And so I lived here for 23 years now, pretty much all my adult life. When I came here, I was a little under 21. I'm Jewish, and life was difficult. I was an ethnic Jew. You can't escape. I was just like everybody else, and that's the whole problem, that you are, and you're not being seen like everybody else. You have been seen as if you had a star on your forehead. You're labeled everywhere, too. I mean, in all school records, in your passport, of course, but internal passport, which is your internal official ID, and in all school records, on every page, you have your last name, your first name, and what is called nationality, but that's really ethnicity. So it will say ethnic background, and it would say Jewish, right there. So for every teacher, right there. At the times when all institutions were collapsing and people were desperate, life becomes very unpredictable. Government cannot protect or shield you in any way, even if they honestly wanted, which they didn't. But discrimination within the established society was more systemic. And so you could accept or get angry at some points of it, but you at least knew what not to do to, you know what not to do to make the dog bark, right? So in the same way, you can kind of have some semblance of control over your life. You still know you need to be the best student in every class to just be considered equal. But when even that collapses, you would prefer systemic discrimination over randomness. Suddenly somebody marks your door, somebody beats up your friend, somebody assaults you in a university cafeteria. You face all kinds of limitations. Imagine you're playing a game. They may not be the rules you like. They may be the rules that put you at a huge disadvantage automatically, but they are applied consistently. You can function. You will not win, but you can establish your own milestones for yourself within that game. Versus without rules, it's all random. I was a 20-year-old. My life was in danger, and so I applied. I came here and applied for political asylum and was granted it later on. So, yeah, so that's why I came here, and that's how I changed the climate. And I'm very fearless. I am very aggressive, not in the sense that I beat up everyone whom I meet. But I'm a very straightforward speaker. I don't give up on anything. It's been noted it worked my way, and it worked against me a lot of times in my life. I worked in public accounting, and that's a boys' club, big-time boys' club. So having a woman with an aggressive mindset, no matter if she's right, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. She cannot speak up. What are you talking about? So it didn't really work out. I was doing great. The boss of my boss loved me always, but my boss always hated me. And we're not talking about the particular boss or the particular boss of my boss. It's just a standard situation. Then I started my own practice. My clients love me, but yeah, I am pretty fearless. Starting my late teens, I was not like this when I was little. In fact, I was shy when I was little, but either it is developmental change or it is change in my brain, because something in my brain might have triggered it. They tried to tell me not to lift, not to move, not to learn, which was the scariest part, and not to learn was the scariest by far for me, and maybe it led to everything else in that sense. If we put it in parallel with my pain, ignoring my pain, like at some point I made up my mind and I said I will be normal. That was an act of defiance. you just make up your mind, you feel you're ready, and you just do it differently. You live your life differently from that moment on. So I guess I could be in a wheelchair, overweight, in some kind of a facility in Russia right now. And I'm not. I'm physically active, healthy, 43-year-old, CPA, with two healthy children, we live a good life. And in my particular story, you're not supposed to recover from being dead. This is as ultimate as it gets, right? When you pronounce dead, it's not the end.